Ladies, gentlemen, everyone listening, welcome to episode 71 of the Diamond Duo Podcast. My name is Tom Bauer. I'm joined, as always, by my co-host and co-producer, Tony Puglisi, as we dive deep into the world of baseball each and every episode, just for you fine people out there. This episode is brought to you by Keemstar, because like him, Tony and I are going to get right into the news! Tony, I hope you enjoyed that intro. I had like 50 things to pull from our legendary pre-recording session. And that one left a lasting impact, and probably the cleanest thing I probably could have taken from that.
That's enormously sad, but also very true. I'm also wondering how many folks in our audience are actually going to get that. Know who Keemstar is, and it took me a minute to remember who he was, but then you said that, and I'm like, oh, right! I happened to just say right, exactly like him just there. Now I'm infected. Thanks, Tom.
You're welcome.
No, this was absolutely, I wish, Tom, you have no idea how badly I wish we could talk about some of the stuff we talked about pre-show. Just a tad inappropriate, just a wee bit. We're gonna leave it at that for the most part, but mother of God, Tom and I were in stitches. This is why we need to just start recording the second we get on the call. The blooper folder would be bursting, absolutely about to explode with content.
Yes, it would. And I feel like I have to mention this because I told you I would. So among some of the things that we talked about, I'm not going to list them all. That's for the blooper folder. That already has everything we talked about. One of the things we somehow stumbled upon was my discovery that I had a ChatGPT account. And so, yeah, I'm going right into that, Tony.
Oh,
so, let's just say there were some things discussed prior to the episode, and it inspired me to ask ChatGPT, write me a sexy intro to a podcast about baseball.
I still do not know what possessed you to write that. And not just that, ladies and gentlemen, for the record, he regenerated it. He got one, was so content and happy with it, probably going to dictate it to you right now, that he got a second one. And this one was like 4 paragraphs long. I was going to say, I don't know if anyone's ever used ChatGPT for this, but mother God, I like to think we're pioneers in that regard.
Based off of this one-time thing, I asked it to write me an intro. I might ask ChatGPT to write me every single intro I do going forward, but we will see. So, I gave you the result. Again, write me a sexy intro to a podcast about baseball. And let's go back in time a little bit. Let's pretend this is episode 69 of the Diamond Duo Podcast, because this would be incredible for an intro. Mine was already great enough with the sound effects and everything, but this one just hits you all in the right places. So, without further ado, drum roll, please! Here we go. By the way, for the record, before I start, I probably should have said this before the sexy music began. It gave me a generated name for a podcast, so here we go once again. Welcome to Diamond Desire, where passion meets the plate. The podcast that's ready to hit it out of the park and slide into your deepest baseball fantasies. I'm your host, I'll just say Tom Bauer, igniting the sparks between the bases and swinging for your heartstrings. Excuse me, that was not part of the intro, please. I just had to do that.
Please keep that in. Do not edit that out. It's all sexy and then...
I had a perfect sound effect for that, but I can't because it's on... Oh, wait, I actually can. It's on a different page. Is it this?
Really shove it down your throat.
Yeah, that. I felt that was perfect for that situation.
the rails, and you are not even two sentences in. You are halfway through introducing yourself. Shove it down your throat.
Now we both have it on the record, so.
I forgot I said it too. God damn it, me.
I know, I guilted you into saying it. So anyway, I'm just going to restart at this rate, because
You're going to go through this whole thing?
I'm just going to start it at I'm your host. I just needed to start the music over in case it ran out.
Oh, so here okay, we go fantastic. Again. Yeah, fresh start. You're f***ing choking again.
I'm sorry, I was partially sick a week ago. Bite me. Anyway.
Yeah, how dare you.
I'm your host, Tom Bauer, igniting the sparks between the basses and swinging for your heartstrings. From the crack of the bat to the curve of a sultry smile, we're diving headfirst into the world of America's favorite pastime, like you've never experienced before. This is where it gets great, people. So grab your headphones tight, because we're about to explore the sensual side of strikeouts. The steamy secrets of stolen bases. Now, this next sentence is going to make me uncomfortable saying it, but f*** it. ChatGPT said it, so it's not me. I'm repeating ChatGPT. And the undeniable allure of those tight uniforms. That leave us all begging for an extra inning. It's time to play ball and let the games of passion begin.
So now's a great time to say that was not ChatGPT. Tom wrote that and by himself and you wanted wish. To say.
You wish I would not say that. No, no.
I was wondering when throughout that you would crack. I got it exactly right, because it was the same part we both lost it when you read it before the show. It was, no, I think it was right before the allure of the, you know, you said it, you're not getting me to say it, but.
No, say it. It's right there for you. You might as well say it.
No, thank you. You already got it across. I don't need to reiterate that point. I still can't believe, of all the things that are still getting me, Diamond Desire was an AI-generated name. I straight up thought you made it up. I thought what it gave you was Welcome To, brackets, podcast name. And I also forgot that Where Passion Meets the Plate was also a part of the, name. That's the subheader for this fictional podcast. God, maybe for Valentine's Day or for the month of February, we'll just officially rename ourselves as that and then go back to it for March.
See, I remember it took us like 2 weeks to initially come up with the name of a podcast. This would have been perfect in that situation. I think Diamond Desire would have come in a close second to the Diamond Duo podcast, which is what you are listening to right now. We will actually talk about baseball. I truly do apologize.
This was just too good not to share. Too good not to share, though.
I would share the quote that Tony wrote in the chat from a video that popped up on YouTube when I went to search for something. I will not be repeating that quote. Because if you thought me saying something about allure of uniforms was bad, oh, the other one might be a more episode 69-esque, if you may. But at any rate, this is not the Diamond Desire Where Passion Meets the Plate podcast. This is the Diamond Duo podcast. And this is a drama-filled episode of baseball talk, because every single story that we really have can almost be its own deep drive to left in a way. So much so that I'm just going to play the deep drive to left intro, because honestly, it fits the episode's billing so well. So here it is.
I can't tell you how much I say from the bottom of my heart, I'm so very, very sorry. I pride myself and think of myself as a man of faith, as there's a drive in a deep left field by Castellanos that will be a home run, and so that'll make it a 4-0 ball game. I don't know if I'm going to be putting on this headset again.
Thank you, Tom. So, any rate, this is pretty much a deep dive into baseball news over the past week or two, because we haven't recorded in a week, by the way. And by the way, we're actually recording on Monday, August 14th, not a Wednesday again because of the f***ing trade deadline. We are recording late at night. It is 10:33 currently at the moment, so anything that happens after this moment in time will not be covered unless it's incredibly breaking news that requires me and Tony to sit down once again and talk. Go follow us, by the way, on social media at The Diamond Duo Podcast on Instagram, at Diamond Duo Pod on X, formerly known as Twitter, as I was told to say at one point in time, for more show content, updates, etc. and so forth. By the way, we actually put out our poll for teams of the month or teams of the first half. Yeah, that was like 3 weeks too late, but it doesn't matter at this rate. We're just glad that we did it. And I'd like to point out, yours truly, Tom Bauer, won by 3 total votes. I believe it was 8-5 was the final vote tally. So thank you, everybody, who helped me defeat Tony Puglisi, which I couldn't say the same for in fantasy, but at least I won where it truly matters in drafting stuff on this podcast.
You stole the words right out of my mouth, because the second you thought of that, I'm literally just now, I'm going to pull up our week in fantasy, because
who gives a f***?
Tom's favorite player, as everyone knows, is Jose Altuve, so naturally, Altuve had to have an OBP of 500, a home run, 5 steals in 1 week against him. It's just how it works, you know? It's a law of nature.
Okay, midget supporter.
Supporter. Who's the other one on my team that was doing really well? Was J-Ram. We'll actually talk about J-Ram later and why I was praising him. But for the time being, disclaimers out of the way, sensual intro out of the way. Tom, what say we get right into the news?
Keemstar! 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 To the intro!
What is up, Drum Alert Nation? I'm your host, Killer Keemstar. Let's go right
into the news! I had to take over there because the video cut out, unfortunately, on YouTube. But
I'm gonna need... Jesus Christ, are you, like, okay?
I swear to God, I will be fine. I apologize, I'm coughing into the mic like 5 times already. But that's what I was referencing, by the way, for you old folk that might be out there listening to this podcast.
Old folk. No, I also want to point out, I'm going to go into this episode when it's fully, like, done, uploaded, and posted. I'm just going to pull your audio of you chanting Keemstar, and I'm going to post that. Like, you know how we used to do those little audiograms? I'm just going to do that. It's good.
That's a perfect social media content, just me going Keemstar. Great. Can't wait for that to bite me in the ass one day. Anyway, this is the drama-filled episode of the Diamond Duo Podcast, so we didn't obviously play that Keemstar intro for no reason at all, as there is a lot of drama that has been released onto the baseball landscape this past week or two, and we're going to start with probably the most damning and serious story. Now, let's preface this story by saying these are allegations that we know of. You're innocent until proven guilty. However, if proven guilty, Jesus f***ing Christ, this is a very, very, very f***ed up situation. And I do mean that in all seriousness. So without further ado, Wander Franco. Yes, the Wander Franco story is how we will be starting out, the most recent story on our list of stuff. He was called out on Twitter. Actually, I believe it started on Instagram. Somebody was posted a translation of what was said on somebody's Instagram. Supposedly for having a relationship with a minor. Keep in mind, Wander Franco is 22 years old at this moment. The girl that he was having a relationship with allegedly was 14 years old. Again, nothing's confirmed. Pictures have surfaced, though, and they do seem legit. Wander Franco, at this moment, is currently on the restricted list, not traveling with the Tampa Bay Rays, because MLB and the team is investigating the matter, and they're taking it very seriously, obviously. He was even pulled out of the game, or he wasn't scheduled to play that Sunday game, August 13th, when the allegations were released around noon, I would say. And Kevin Cash kind of blew it off that said it was a given day off, but I think we kind of know what was going on based on the evidence, so-called evidence, that was released on social media at the time. So, it's messed up. No joking about this one, really, with the Juan DeFranco situation, Tony. It's just a very, very disgusting case, if this is proven true.
Absolutely is, and sad part is, it's not even the first time something disgusting like this has happened. The fact that we've had, this is what, the third time now where a disgusting, for lack of a better term, case like this has come up across Major League Baseball is not a good look. Not a good look at all for neither player, team, nor league. Again, nothing gets confirmed right now, so I'm not just gonna outright oust him as an SA. But if this does turn out to be true in the days following this recording, but preceding the episode's release, holy shit, you're going to get one hell of an update from either Editor Tom or Editor Tony, basically calling him out for the dickhead he will eventually have been proved to be. And while nothing is known and pictures do exist, there are whispers just all around baseball as to what is that exactly is happening, because the MLB has launched an investigation. There is something going on now. And even in the Dominican Republic, like there's an attorney general in the Dominican Republic that recently got a complaint filed against Juan DeFranco from a minor, according to Twitter. And that doesn't exactly look good for him. I mean, it seems like there's shots coming from all directions, but every shot either paints him as someone who was in the wrong, but and should have known better, but was largely, you know, not a crime, just taboo, or a full-on pedophile. Either way, Juan DeFranco does not look like the good guy in however, whatever rumors are circulating right now. Again, just rumors, don't want to oust the guy yet if he does prove to be innocent. MLB's going to be thorough about this. Again, the Dominican Republic's in on this, and they've shelved guys for this horrific crime of a much greater standing than Juan DeFranco. See also Trevor Bauer. So, if this is actually proven to be true, his career is over. That's beyond a doubt at this point. He's going to go to Japan, maybe, or China, if he still wants to play baseball, and he's never going to be welcomed in American baseball again. That's just how it's going to work. And frankly, if he's guilty, that absolutely should be what happened. So, just a really, really shitty situation that just developed a couple days ago, actually. I think just yesterday, my mistake, out of Tampa Bay. I really, really hope, for the love of God, that this is false, because there are whispers that this is just a girl who's done this in the past and has and just wants money or something out of him. But it sucks, but we don't know for sure.
Yeah, screw playing baseball in Japan or China. If this is found to actually be true and he was fully aware of what was going on, he ain't gonna be going to any of those leagues. He's gonna be playing in a prison league, because that's where he's gonna be, is behind bars in either the DR or in the US. I don't know how exactly the law would work in that case, but he ain't gonna be welcomed in baseball in any facet, definitely in North America, or any place with standards, let me say that. And yeah, his career would be entirely over. So that would be the case there, and as Tony mentioned, and I will acknowledge too, because I've seen the rumors out there that this could be an extortion plot by somebody. The girl could actually be 18 or 19 with three kids already, and is just doing it because she wants the money. There's all other rumors that Wander's offered the hush money and kind of knew what was going on. It's a whole messed up situation where ultimately we still have to decipher fact from fiction. And that's a little bit difficult to do at the moment because, again, we don't really know the details. However, like we said, Major League Baseball is investigating this. So until we know the results of that investigation, I don't think we can really speculate that much more on an ongoing criminal matter involving a baseball player, really anybody, because then we could just be spreading incriminating stuff ourselves, and we don't want to be associated with that to try and paint somebody in a more negative light. However, again, if found guilty, and again, he knew it well, what was going on, boy, you're going to hell. That's all I'm going to say. All right. So we kind of go on from a very up situation to a situation that is more, I guess you could say, lighthearted in a way. The story that really took baseball by storm on a night where there were UFC fighters fighting in the ring, or a fake boxer, aka one of the Paul brothers, fighting Nate Diaz. The real fight, the one everybody was asking for, took place on a Major League Baseball field. In one corner, you have the Guardians' star third baseman, MVP candidate, MVP choice, by yours truly and Tony Puglisi, Jose Ramirez! And in the other corner, you've got somebody who's gotten in the spotlight before for other issues, let's say. Somebody who is on the Chicago... Is the shortstop of the Chicago White Sox. One home run and one knockout on his resume. Not necessarily in a good light in the year of 2023. Tim Anderson! Damn it, I had to cough at the end again.
I was gonna say, you've coughed, what, like five times so far? Maybe I should have done the UFC intro.
I mean, maybe you should have, but I think that was pretty good, now. Minus the part where I stuttered in the middle.
It was fun, all things considered. Just don't want you f***ing up your throat.
Yeah, thank you. I really don't want that either. Any rate, do you want to hear how the fight went? Well, you already know how the fight went down, because this is 2 weeks after it happened. But guess what? You're going to hear the incredible call by Cleveland Radio's Tom Hamilton, once again, courtesy of 1100 WTAM.
By the diving Vaughn, down the right field line, kicks into the corner. Ramirez on his way to second, head first slide, safe and in to score is Jimenez. And another hustle double, right over the bag at first. Now Hosey and Anderson square off. They're fighting, they're swinging.
Down he goes! A first round TKO! Why the f*** is that playing again? I paused it. F*** you.
Hey, don't tell Tom Hamilton f*** you. That man's a legend.
No, I'm telling X to go f*** itself. Elon Musk keeps f***ing over the platform.
Elon Monkey? That's a new one. I've heard Elon Muskrat, but... There you go, blooper folder.
I would be one to call him Elon Muskrat, though. I do have a very bad opinion of him. But that doesn't really matter right now. Tony, please go on and talk about this before I start coughing again.
I don't even know where to begin with this, Tom, because I was out. I was out with some friends at an arcade that night when it happened. And around the time the fight was actually going viral, we had retreated to the basement where there was a little food kiosk, a bar, a couple pool tables, and some regular tables. So, me and all my friends, we got some food. I think we just got some fries to pick on. And then up in the corner in ESPN, I just see, like, this clip from the Cleveland-Chicago game. And I recognize the flow of Jose Ramirez. I'm like, oh my god, what the f*** is happening? I see him squaring up. I'm like, who the f*** is he fighting? What's happening? Only to see that he's absolutely squaring up is a good way of putting it with Tim Anderson. But let me walk you through the fight really briefly, just in case you hadn't seen it. I'm not going to detail everything because, you know, you should go see it for yourself. Some things are better left discovered for the first time, but... Jose slides into second, right between Anderson's legs. Anderson takes offense to this for some reason, because Tim Anderson, is one to take offense. Let's say that. Not the first time something like that's happened. What is this, Tom? Like, the fifth team he's gotten a quarrel with? I don't know, fake tough guy will do fake tough guy things. But either way, goes right between his legs, Anderson takes exception, Jose gets up, and Tim Anderson starts jawing at him. Jose jaws right back. And I forget who squares up first. I think they both just mutually got into fighting mode, which, Tom,
it was
one of
Anderson,
my favorite...
for the record.
It was Anderson, I thought so. But my favorite thing about this that not a lot of people are talking about is you notice in the clip when the two get up and start squawking at each other, the umpire, the second base ump, is right in the middle of them trying to defuse the situation. Like, hey, guys, come on, calm down. Let's not get heated. The second that Anderson throws his glove down and they both, like, put up their dukes ready to each other up. He immediately just backpedals, does not get involved, and becomes a boxing ref. Like, nope, don't want this. Just whoever goes down first, I'll grab him. And then, like a miracle from heaven, like, I forget, I think Anderson, I'm literally watching the fight on my phone right now. Anderson gets, like, a couple weak swings in. I don't even want to call them swings. I think one brushes Jose, and it barely does anything at all. And then, mother of God, what happens next is a work of art, because, Tom, I think this might be my new favorite punch over the Odor punch. In terms of pure ridiculousness, because credit where credit is due. If you don't know, I'm talking about the Jose Bautista Rude Neto Odor fight. If you don't know that one, please, for the love of God, look it up. It's just as amazing. But if you remember, Bautista took a right cross to the face from Odor, and he took it like a champ. He was feeling a little winded, but mother of God, he stayed on his feet somehow, albeit being hoisted up by Adrian Beltre. Dude, this... I'm sorry, I'm still not over this. Jose's, like, still getting his bearings. He's, like, off-balanced a bit, trying to dodge Anderson's punches. He lets off. Like, rips a right hook out of nowhere. I thought it missed at first until I saw Anderson stumble. Nay, not stumble, tumble to the f***ing ground upon being decked by a 5'8" Dominican third baseman known more for his speed than his raw power. And he goes to the ground like a sack of bricks. This is the funniest thing. I'm gonna be honest, Tom, that flop from Anderson, I don't want to say flop like it was intentional, that tumble that Anderson took is a perfect encapsulation of the White Sox season. This to me represents everything the White Sox have done on the field the past two seasons. This is like poetry. I'm going to be honest, the baseball gods could not have painted a better picture of the White Sox season than this little squabble between J-Ram and Tim Anderson. It's just art. There's no other way I could describe it. It's art.
All I'm going to say is that umpire made a business decision and decided to get the hell out of the way. Otherwise, he may have took five fingers to the face, just like Tim Anderson did. And to paraphrase, I'm assuming this is Chris Rock. And maybe it's that movie he did with Adam Sandler, that football movie. I forget which movie it is. Maybe, or maybe it's from it's from Friday, I think. Maybe it's not Chris Rock. I don't know. You got knocked the f*** out! That's exactly Friday. What happened. Yeah, that is Friday.
It's Chris Tucker, not Chris Rock, but close enough.
I get them confused all the time. I apologize. two great comedians. But any rate, yeah, Anderson got KO'd, absolutely. And I agree with you. This might be the most effective punch in Major League Baseball history. Nolan Ryan, I mean, we did the MLB fights tier list a while back, I'm pretty sure. If not, we at least toiled around the idea. I forget what we had number one.
I think it was the Padres Braves from 1984. Like the series of fights they had. It was like with Pedro Pascal, Pascual Perez, that's his name. Pedro Pascal. Yeah.
I believe that's the actor from The Mandalorian that you're referring to.
Oh my God, you're totally right. I'm thinking of Pascual Perez. Yeah, no, when the Padres kept throwing at him and they just kept escalating and they fought like seven times, which to be fair, that's definitely more chaotic than this. But in terms of one pure hilarious moment, I don't know. I think the J-Ram punch might be up there now, man. Like, that's at least up there with the Odor hit.
Yeah, Pedro Pascal whooped ass on a whole nother level. Unlike what happened with Tim Anderson. I'm trying to find the graphic because I swear to God we did this as a tier list. But either way, it doesn't matter. What matters is this is going to live in baseball infamy forever and is the most knockout punch that I've seen, considering Tim Anderson literally got the Sonic rings knocked right out of him. Thank you, by the way, to the multiple people who sent me that as an edit after I requested it specifically on Twitter, because I couldn't find it for the life of me, and then I got it sent by like three people, so thank you very much for that. That was very, very nice of y'all. So fun. I was going to say Nolan Ryan probably dominated the most in a fight, considering he just put Robin Ventura in a headlock and then just beat the ever-living shit out of him, but J-Ram, oh boy, that might stand up there for the most effective punch. Because Anderson went right down. His teammates couldn't even do anything. And after that, it kind of dissipated. And then everything started to pick back up again. There was more fighting. Anderson tried to get back out there for more. He had to get restrained by Andrew Vaughn at one point, who kind of picked him up like a spoiled brat. Like at one point and sat his ass in the dugout. That was great. The managers were going at it. Greifel and Tito. That was great. Some of the other highlights. Let's see. I'm scrolling down in our thing. We'll get to the suspensions in a minute. They're probably all done by now. How could I forget this one? Eloy Jimenez somehow, as if he wasn't injury prone enough. I don't know if that was a business decision, like he wanted to stop fighting or whatever. He managed to hurt himself watching people scrap. He was limping away from the fight, like, ah, my leg, my leg, my leg. Oh my god, he was okay, he stayed in the game, but oh my god, is that funny, given the White Sox unfortunate history of injuries and crap, and Eloy Jimenez just being completely injury prone to the point where just staring at fighting and shuffling around in the altercation just gets him hurt. Oh, that's unbelievable stuff.
Tom, you know how people get sympathy sad for someone else? Like, if you were sad and I saw you, I would get sad by proxy. Maybe Eloy is receptive to injury. Like, he sees other people getting hurt. He himself must get hurt. Like, he didn't go to the IL or anything, but there was a very distinct clip of him literally hopping on one leg away from the fight, not putting any weight on his left foot. And as someone who drafted this f***ing hunk of glass in fantasy, it's aggravating, but it's also just comical at this point. How prone this, like, 6'7" titan of sport is to injury. Like, you gotta wonder if he's even built for the game at this point. He's never played more than, what, like, 110 games? If even that? I just found that funny about the whole thing. Something I wanted to just mention that's not in the rundown, but, Tim Anderson. Jose Ramirez actually had some choice words for Tim Anderson in the postgame when asked about it. This is courtesy of John Boy Media via Twitter. They didn't get the quote. This is just I'm getting it from them. Well, it's via Bally Sports Cleveland. There you go. Says Jose Ramirez, I think he's been disrespecting the game for a while now. It's not just from today. I've been having the chance to tell him during the game. As the play happened, he tagged me again really hard, and then he wanted to fight, so I defended myself. So, not the biggest fan of Tim Anderson, Jose Ramirez is. I alluded to it earlier, but he's made some enemies throughout the game and throughout MLB fan bases. And Tom, even crazier, allegedly, he made one in his own f***ing teammate. This is a story that surfaced a little bit after the fight, but it took place well before the All-Star break, actually, because as the story goes, White Sox catcher Yasmani Grandal wanted to leave to go, I guess, home or on vacation. He wanted to go somewhere the day before the All-Star break kicked in. He wasn't in the lineup, assuming he asked for his manager's blessing, and he got it. He debated leaving, just start his vacation a little early. What do they need him for? Tim Anderson, in a roundabout way, in a paraphrased way, I should say, basically said he can go f*** himself. You know, you, we don't need you. And then Yasmani, in front of everybody, pulled a Tommy Pham and just smacked the shit out of him in the locker room and then walked away. This guy just can't get away from controversy. He can't. And what's even better about the whole thing, I'm going to pull him up on Baseball Reference, Tom, but the White Sox brass has been able to hide Anderson's antics behind, he's an all-star level shortstop. He's one of our best players, probably up there with guys like Dylan Cease and potential of Luis Robert. Not anymore. Let's read out some of his numbers, shall we? .240 batting average on the year. A contact guy predicated on base hits is hitting .240. For reference, I'm quite sure that would be somewhere down there in the New York Yankees starting lineup. It's that bad. He's being outslugged by pitchers before the universal DH. And that's not even a joke, by the way. His slugging is .286. His OBP is .285. Are you f***ing kidding me? That's an OPS plus of 59. That is
nice.
Out of 100, 59 is his OPS plus. And his Baseball Reference WAR, Tom, is a thing of beauty. Would you like to guess?
Negative 1.9.
You are so close. Negative 1.7.
Aww. It's better than that.
He is straight up the worst qualified hitter in baseball this year. So, I'm going to just wager a guess, Tom. I'm going to just take a shot in the dark. He's got an option a team option for 2024, I'm going to guess that's not getting picked up. Unless the White Sox just want to keep spinning the tires, because I don't know who else they'd throw out at shortstop. Maybe just get Leury Garcia back for a revenge tour. I don't know, but if they put Tim Anderson back out there, that's just an automatic white flag for 2024. I know they're not going to win anyway, but how much longer can they tolerate him anyway? Production and drama now weighing him down.
They might as well pick up that option, I will say, from a business perspective, because if he turns it around, he'll have trade bait next year. Because Lord knows he doesn't have a future with that organization. And we're going to talk about how much more worse of an organization they are later in the episode, by the way, because there was some dirty laundry that was aired by a now Yankees relief pitcher who was a Chicago White Sox that said some rather unpleasant things about his former ball club.
Unratherly pleasant.
Yeah, that wasn't phrased very well. Any rate, Tim Anderson, actually, I give him credit for the Grandal situation. I would have told him to go f*** himself, too. But based on, again, those reports, obviously that makes sense. Because why the hell are you leaving a day early? It's not like you're going to Seattle. Your ass sucks, Yasmani Grandal. You're used to lure Manny Machado to Chicago, and you've been shitting the bed ever since. Ugh. And then he gets slapped in the face by Grandal. That is honestly a good retribution. You shut him the hell up after that. There's no coming back from that, unfortunately. Your reputation sunk. You're just garbage at that rate, unfortunately, if you're Tim Anderson. And he was taken to Twitter, by the way, after that, and posted some rather cryptic messages. I'm not going to read them, because there's like 50 of them, probably. But Anderson was not in the right state of mind, let's just say that, after this whole fiasco happened the day after. But the suspensions of this whole thing, Tim Anderson, because he started the whole thing, he got 6 games, which is great. Probably amalgamates for the amount of seconds he spent on the dirt after getting absolutely knocked the f*** out by Jose Ramirez, who got a 3-game suspension for knocking out Anderson. By the way, that was reduced to 2 games because MLB said, yeah, we'll give you the extra pass. That's good. You knocked out Tim Anderson. You know what? You clocked him so hard, we'll take a game off your suspension. And then Emmanuel Clase, Pedro Grifol, Terry Francona, some guy named Sarbro, and I think some others maybe as well, but it doesn't really matter. They all got suspended 1 game. They all served their stuff. Doesn't matter. The suspensions are probably over at this rate. So that's that whole situation. It's just something that took baseball by storm. We needed to bring up. It was too hilarious not to.
Absolutely. Might honestly be story of the year at this rate. You know it's special when it's literally everywhere. Like Twitter, ESPN, your local news probably talked about it. When baseball's everywhere, it's got to be for something special. And Lord howdy was this something special. So thank you, Guardians and White Sox, for doing probably the most significant thing either of you will do throughout the entire 2023 season. Now, Tom, let's move right along. I organized this really interestingly. I went from the biggest stories down, but this also means we went from a shitty story to a pretty funny story, and now we're right back to a shitty story, because as many wins as the Baltimore Orioles have been catching so far this year, they still lead the American League, right? They're in first place, in a great place to make the postseason, maybe even go on a run. Best year they've had in years. They just had to catch one of the largest L's I may have ever seen off the field in my life. And I mean this from the perspective of Orioles broadcaster Kevin Brown, when they actually suspended him for a dastardly crime, an absolute unforgivable act that announcers should take heed to never make the same mistakes. He talked about stats. Oh my god, he talked about the Orioles' poor record against Tampa Bay.
No.
Not only that, the program director greenlit it. The graphics guy made a graphic and a witty saying to title the graphic. And it aired on TV. So many people were involved, but obviously this is Kevin Brown's fault. That asshole, we must punish him of the highest authority. So he got banned for like 2 games, and then the entire world got pissed, and now he's back.
Not that really changed anything in that process. We still know exactly what happened, and we can sniff bullshit from a mile away. And by the way, I do have the audio pulled up of this. I could play everybody. Well, you know what? I'll get into that in a minute. Here's Kevin Brown, and supposedly what he was suspended for, and later we heard, at least in my workplace, sources confirmed this was actually what he was suspended for. Let's take a listen. I believe this is courtesy of Masson, MASN, the Orioles TV affiliate, who is, by the way, owned by the team. I'll just point that out there. Anyway, here we go.
For the Orioles, Brandon Hyde has felt like this has been maybe the toughest ballpark to play in, but the Orioles have a chance to do something special today. They've already clinched at least a split in the series, winning two of the first three, and they could pick up a series win behind Tyler Wells today. It's been a minute. The Orioles split a two-gamer with the Rays in June. They had lost their last 15 series here at Tropicana Field. You have to go back to when our now colleague Brad Brock picked up the win in the series finale June 25th, 2017, the last time the Orioles won a series here at St. Pete. Already got 3-2 at the Trop this year after winning 3 of 18 the previous 3 years combined. It is a stark difference, Ben, and it is not a bad Rays team. It's not like all of a sudden the Rays became slouches in the American League East. They've led this division every day, but now two, and the Orioles once again are back alone in first place.
By the way, if you couldn't tell through all that, the graphic, by the way, was called Tropical Depression, which showed the O's record, like 0-16 or whatever the hell the graphic said in the past. And then they said this season, they're actually 3-2 against him, a winning record. Surprise, surprise. So this was actually complimentary of the Orioles against the Rays in the past. We all know the Orioles sucked over the past 5 years. They tanked. They had like 3 number one overall picks. It's not rocket science to decipher that. But apparently, John Angelos, or is it Peter Angelos, I don't know which one it is, I know it's the son of the dead owner, I'm pretty sure, had a stick up his ass one day and decided, you know what, I'm suspending Kevin Brown, one of the most brilliant broadcasters in baseball, because he talked about my team so poorly. At least that's what he thought. In reality, again, he is complimenting the Orioles, saying, this year's been great against the Rays compared to years past. We finally cracked the code. We've turned the page. And yet he suspended him. He didn't suspend the producer that approved of the graphic. He didn't suspend the graphics operator, like Tony mentioned. No one else got suspended by Kevin Brown. No relation to the former pitcher, by the way, if you were wondering that. He was suspended because the Orioles thought this was derogatory of their brand. Wow. Because baseball broadcasts do this all the time. You can make fun of teams out in Oakland, apparently, and you're going to get suspended because, God forbid, they have nothing positive to say about this year. And I haven't even listened to one of their broadcasts, minus the N-word controversy we had 2 months ago. Minus that, you could probably say whatever the hell you want about the Oakland A's. You're not getting suspended. It's ludicrous why he was even suspended in the first place. And MLB should have stepped in. This is Rob Manfred's job. I'm going to echo Michael Kay's thoughts in this. He should have stepped in and told Angelos, what the hell are you doing? You're making yourself look like a dunce. Take it back. The Orioles never said anything, as they could. The poor social media intern probably couldn't do anything, unfortunately. Angelos should have had to make a statement himself that said, I was in the wrong. Instead, we just had to speculate for ourselves as to why that was the case. Kevin Brown would go on to put more positive statements out in the world saying, I'm good with the Orioles and whatnot. Well, yeah, he's supposed to say that because he doesn't want to lose his job. As much as Gary Cohen said that 29 other teams would be happy to pick him up, it's not a guarantee he would get a play-by-play job with any of those organizations. He's a brilliant broadcaster, but doesn't necessarily mean that he's going to get play-by-play on another team. And somebody else would just take the job anyway. Even if the Orioles are a shit organization. Look what happened with John Miller a while ago. They fired him because the Angeloses and him had to stick up their ass. Not Miller, just the owners. Miller was in the right, obviously. But the Orioles, they should just be ashamed of all this. And they should have, Angelo should have had to put out his own statement or had to face the press. And hopefully he will in the near future. And somebody has the balls to raise that up and keep pressing him until he issues an apology. Because that's what Kevin Brown deserves.
What I find truly ironic about this situation is Kevin Brown was suspended by the Orioles, by John Angelos, for giving the Orioles a bad look. To say Angelos' actions gave the Orioles a bad look would probably be the biggest understatement of this entire episode. The entire baseball landscape put them on blast for this. Tom, you already mentioned Michael Kay and Gary Cohen, two of the most vocal opposers to the Orioles' actions, and rightfully so. I mean, Gary and Michael have both been doing what they've done for many, many years, and both have echoed that throughout their lengthy, illustrious careers, not once has ownership barked at them like that or banned them, suspended them for nothing. They've always had great relationships with the team and their owners. That is coming from two New York-based teams, the most vicious media market in the world. And if you're being, if Baltimore's topping that, that's some kind of a problem. More so from that, they got complaints from everywhere. Not just the Yankees and Mets, the Red Sox, the White Sox. I think the A's even chimed in. The weirdest one I saw was RG3 on Twitter yelling about the situation, which I found kind of strange, but hey, he's backing the right horse. This was such a disgusting situation for the Orioles. Just a mess. Like, what are you doing? This is probably the best your organization has looked since you were competing for the playoffs in the mid-2010s. Hell, you can even argue it's their best regular season since they were regularly competing for World Series back in the 90s and 80s. And this is how you want to stamp the second half of the season? This is how you want to start? What are you, crazy? What are you, stupid? Thankfully, again, it does have a happy ending in Kevin Brown being properly reinstated in his job, hopefully for a very long time, because Tom, you hit the nail on the head. He's a fantastic broadcaster who doesn't get nearly enough love that he deserves because he's relatively new on the scene compared to some of the more seasoned vets of baseball play-by-play. Fantastic broadcaster, horrible situation. I'm thankful he's come out on the other side of it. If there is any justice in this world, Angelos is going to have to answer to why he did that. He's probably never going to have to, because this man holds a stranglehold on the Baltimore media. You brought up the John Miller situation. I think that speaks volumes to the Angelos relationship with not just the media, but the city as a whole. It's just dumb. I'm glad it's over, and undeniably dumb. Hopefully the Orioles, the team, can have enough success to kind of drown out that murky story, because now is not the year for the Orioles' ownership strife and troubles to rear their ugly heads again.
Yeah, the team doesn't deserve the negative light that they've gotten because of their great play on the field, the great youngsters on that team. And I'm a Yankee fan, and I'm complimenting the Baltimore Orioles, division rival. But this is a dictatorship here by the Angeloses, what they did with Kevin Brown. Even the fans saw through their BS. They were chanting, "Free Brown!" at that game that followed that situation. And Masson, by the way, who we just heard that audio clip from, they blurred that out of their broadcast, pretty much. They deafened that. Because obviously the Orioles team doesn't want that on an Orioles network. No, they can't, because that's not good enough in Angelos' prissy perfect world. We all know the Angeloses are kind of pieces of crap. I'm just going to say that. There's been the rumors that they might want out of Baltimore because it's too small of a market, no matter how historic that city is and how much that city does love baseball and how much of a beautiful ballpark they've gotten in Baltimore. They've been cheap with the team pretty much since their whole inception and all that stuff, since taking over the team. They could have extended Machado and built that core for a few more years of a run back in the day, and I'm afraid they might do the same thing with this core, to be honest. There's a lot of moving pieces that are going to need a lot of money in the future, and they might not be privy to pay it. So we shall see. But for now, the Orioles continue to succeed. They continue to roll. Kevin Brown still has his job, thankfully, and he's doing good things in the Orioles broadcast booth. But shame on the Angeloses, you pieces of crap, for doing that. All right, So we're going to stick in the AL East as we continue down our rundown of drama in baseball. Anthony Rizzo. Apparently he was playing with a concussion for 2 months. How didn't anybody know he had a concussion? I'm not a doctor, I'm not a medical expert, but I feel like there's some pretty obvious signs of a concussion. Rizzo even said his vision was foggy for a little while. Now, if he didn't tell the team, that's on him, and he made the team suffer a little bit in that regard. But the team should have taken note of that after Fernando Tatis Jr., the dickhead, kneed him in the f***ing head. It's not necessarily Tatis' fault that the concussion happened, I just don't like Tatis nowadays for many reasons, and that's one of them. Drama from myself aside, Tony wrote it down. It's medical malpractice, it seems like, at this rate, with the Anthony Rizzo situation. Now he's out. He was on the 15-day IL. We don't know when exactly he's going to come back. We don't really have a timetable, although it looks like he's starting to take swings and stuff like that. But still, how do you go 2 months without knowing somebody has a concussion after clearly being hit in the neck or the head in that sensitive spot really hard by Fernando Tatis's knee? How do you miss it?
The fact that this went undiagnosed is not what I'm upset with. Because again, fellas who suffer a concussion don't always experience symptoms right away. Sometimes it can be the most minute of things. Sometimes it can be asymptomatic. Rizzo's not a doctor. It's not his job to say, hey, I think something's wrong. Although granted, if he said his vision was foggy, that probably should have been a tell enough for the Yankees medical staff. I'm so sick of this medical staff. I'm about to go on another rant, but I'm going to hold myself back for the sake that we have stories to talk about after this, including another one about our lovely, lovely New York Yankees after this. But that is a complete fumble for the medical team. That you need to know something is wrong there. We even saw him stumbling around after Tatis hit him. Obviously, Tatis didn't mean to do it, but if you are experiencing things like that, foggy vision, he said he was having trouble sleeping, he said he would wake up feeling a little weird, that's not okay. That's not something that's just like, oh, you're just feeling a little under the weather, bro, take some Tylenol, you're good. It's not that simple. A hit to the head, you gotta take that seriously in sports. Like, I don't care if Judge was hurt at the same time and you wouldn't have anybody on the field. Anthony Rizzo's health is more important here. And we did actually just get an update today. This is from Meredith Marakovitz on Twitter. Anthony Rizzo will head back to New York tomorrow for more testing. Says he feels like he's progressing, did some light agility in the outfield, and is walking at an incline on the treadmill. So that sounds like he's still a bit away from coming back. He's not exactly beyond reason to say he'll be back this year, but it still sounds like we won't see him for a little bit. The fact that, God, this wasn't done earlier, man, is just inexcusable for the Yankees. Absolutely just abysmal work from the Yankees here. Just, I really don't know what else to say, because I feel like I've run in the same circles, episode in and episode out. The Yankees are an incompetent organization, and they continue to show that time and time again with each new story that shows up in the media. There's not been one good bit of positive press for the Yankees this year. Honest to Christ, if this was a season that the Mets were having, mother of God, dude, Mets fans would be up in arms in Twitter. No one would complain because, lol, it's the Mets. It would be up there with 2019 and 1992 with some of the worst seasons ever. And mind you, this is in the middle of the Mets having an equally bad season. So, don't even get me started, man. This team is such a joke. And hating the Yankees aside, I really hope Anthony Rizzo is going to be okay, because people almost forget this because of how bad he was down the stretch, you know, playing with a concussion. It could probably hinder you a little bit. He was amazing to start the season. Before the concussion, he was on track for another 35 homers and 100 ribbies. He really was his prime form again, but it's a killer. We could hope he returns back this year, but at this rate, the season's lost. Just take as much time he needs to recover. If he comes back, cool. If not, hopefully he'll be ready for next year, where I don't even know if he's under contract next year. I think he's got an option, but I just hope he's okay at this point.
Yeah, we have some worse drama that we have to get onto with the Yankees, so I will finish up this Anthony Rizzo conversation relatively quickly. I'm reading a quote from Aaron Boone when they announced he was on the IL, and I'm going to choose to take his word for it because I would like to believe so. that Rizzo went through MLB, all the testing immediately after the Tatis collision, and just of late, back when they figured out he was hurt, he started to complain about being foggy. Maybe it's like post-concussion symptoms, maybe it's delayed, maybe they're onset, I don't really know. But even if he couldn't tell, or the staff couldn't tell based on taking a look at Anthony Rizzo, they could take a look at his numbers and see clearly something was wrong after that. Before May 28th, the day of the concussion, this is from an SB Nation article, by the way, he had played in 53 games, had an average of .304, 11 home runs, and 32 RBIs. A great start to the season, great 2 months. After May 28th, he played in 47 games, had a batting average of .172, hit one singular home run that barely went over the right field fence in Yankee Stadium, and had 9 RBIs. So, if there wasn't any telltale sign of a concussion within Anthony Rizzo, just by kind of taking a look at him just symptomatically, just go look at his stats. Clearly something was wrong. And that's where I'm going to leave that at. Like I said, we have more Yankees chatter to get to, and I think we actually talked about this a little bit in the previous episode, the Domingo Germán situation. I believe that's what we started with last time. But I think we have a little bit more details as to exactly what happened, because if I'm not mistaken, we kind of figured it. I think we recorded the day that the news came out, and more news did come out of that Domingo Germán incident that kind of just paints a picture into really what happened that day that he kind of got sent away from the team and he got help. And again, luckily he is getting help, he's out for the season and whatnot, but it doesn't really necessarily mean the picture was pretty. And obviously it wasn't, because we knew an incident happened, but we now know what the incident was. Tony, why don't you share?
So, that incident we talked about last episode that we were earnestly hoping and praying was not another shady domestic dispute with Domingo Germán, considering his history, turns out to be a shady clubhouse incident instead, which, this is interesting, because the incident, I wrote it in quotes on the rundown, apparently entails Domingo Germán going into a drunken rage in the clubhouse, flipping a couch, breaking a TV, teasing Ron Marinaccio about being sent down to AAA, that's a no-no, as if the rest are, but you don't mess with my boy Ron, and getting into altercations with anybody in the clubhouse he saw. This is not, like, this is a real shame, Tom, because just a couple episodes ago, we were defending Domingo Germán, saying that, you know, after his no-hitter, or excuse me, after his perfect game, that, you know, everyone coming out of their hidey holes in Twitter to trash him about the domestic assault case, and this, that, the other thing, calling him a bad person. And we said, in essence, you know what? His family forgave him. Let's just shut up and let this guy enjoy baseball history. Let's just put that past behind him, you know? Domingo Germán did not want to put that past behind him, and I don't want to on the guy because, frankly, everyone on Twitter does a great job of that, number one. And number two, like you said, Tom, he is getting help. You got to applaud that. The first step to curing an addiction is admitting you have one. But, mother of God, man, how much stranger could his season have gotten? Throws a perfect game, coughs up like 8 runs in 1 inning in Yankee Stadium, and now this, oh my God, this is just such a mess, and it's, again, a perfect microcosm of the Yankees season. Speaking of the Yankees, this happened in their clubhouse. What did they do to resolve the matter? What did they do to assuage the situation and calm their drunken teammate? You know, probably, like, sit him down, get him something to drink, maybe sit him by the toilet if he's gotten that far, which, considering the he did, he probably was. No. The Yankees are, in fact, proven scientists, especially their medical staff, you know, the individuals who left a first baseman with a concussion on the field for 2 months. What they elected to do with their drunken teammate, their compadre in arms, was to stick him in the team sauna to, and I quote, sweat out the alcohol. Not only does this just reek of an old wives' tale, like, I'm gonna be honest, Tom, I've never even heard of this trick. I've heard a ton of tricks of how to get over either a hangover or a drunken state. That's not one of them. But number two, this is just scientifically incorrect. Because heat is known to do one thing to you. Dehydrate you. What kind of state are you in when you're drunk? One of severe dehydration because the amount of alcohol in your body is comparable to the level of water in your body. All the Yankees succeeded in doing was rapidly dehydrating their f***ing teammate by sticking him in a f***ing oven. I don't get this f***ing team, Tom. I can't even be angry anymore. I think I'm just going insane. How you literally could not have handled this situation any worse. Like, I don't want to sound like I'm laughing at someone's alcohol problem, because I'm not. I'm laughing at the way the team handled it. Like, you could have literally left him out on the street, and it would have been just as bad as the approach they actually took. This team is such a f***ing joke. I, again, like to reiterate, I'm glad Herman's getting help. I really do hope he can learn from it this time and grow to be a better person. If he f***s up again, then mother of God, I'm done giving him chances. But hopefully this will be it for him. He'll stay out of the news. He'll come out of this season into the next one and be a fully fixed pitcher and a fixed human being. But God damn it, the Yankees cannot make any situation normal. They have to find some way to embarrass themselves. I want to circle back to what I said earlier. This is honestly up there with some of the most embarrassing Mets seasons I've ever seen in my life as a spectator. But now as an active fan, goddamn Mets fans, I'm sorry. I'm going to go easier on the jokes. Going forward, this is just another level of humiliation for the so-called proudest team in professional sports.
Well, sweat out
your explanation.
Sweat out the alcohol, they say. That's a great way of advertising. We have a sauna in the clubhouse, because I sure as hell didn't know they had such amenities in New Yankee Stadium. I truly believe it, because they have billions of dollars invested in that organization. But, well, now we know that an MLB team has a sauna in their clubhouse, and their genius ideas only continue to bite them in the ass. See, this Yankee conversation could have just been a tale of how things have gone so shitty since the trade deadline, and how Hal is going to keep Brian around and might make Aaron Boone the fall guy, but we're better people than that. Maybe we'll talk about that next week, and I'll regret saying we're better people for not talking about that, but we chose to take the high route and not talk about that stuff, because it's just depressing what's going on in the New York Yankees organization right now. It's just run like absolute buffoonery. Now, I hope the medical staff did not say to do that. I'm assuming it's just the players that had that bright idea of, yeah, let's sweat out the alcohol. Because I can't imagine anyone with any sort of medical knowledge accepting that they did that to a teammate and somebody who needs help. But what do I know? I wasn't there in the situation. I probably could have agreed with the idea, quite frankly, because I didn't even know the science behind it until people said, yeah, don't put a drunk guy in a sauna, otherwise he might die. So, yeah, let's not do that in the future. What you also shouldn't do in the future is what the Anaheim Angels are pretty much doing right now, and that's going for it after the trade deadline and going 0-7 immediately following said trade deadline, where you pick up acquisitions that actually were meant to help the team. But no, you go on a 7-game losing streak. That's good too. That's going to convince Shohei Ohtani to stay in LA. He might stay in LA. It's just going to be in Dodger blue, as I've said all this time. The Angels are actually 3-9 since the deadline, so they've gone 3-2 in their past five. That means whoop-de-f-doo. That's going to do a whole hell of a lot to keep Shohei in the uniform. They still don't have Mike Trout. Anthony Rendon is nowhere to be heard. And really, their strategy of not trading away Shohei for the haul of a century is looking even better day by day. And again, we kind of already said business-wise, this was a terrible, terrible decision. From the common sense of, we're actually still in the hunt, let's go for it, try and make some meaningful moves, rejuvenate the lineup, and make one last push with Shohei, I can understand that from a sentimental perspective, but clearly our business minds were correct, Tony, because it's only gone terribly, terribly wrong. A true dumpster fire of absolute failure by the Los Angeles Angels here. God, if only they had used common sense in this. And I will say this before I throw it to you. The moves they've made in the past before Shohei Ohtani and after Shohei Ohtani with Trout have actually made sense. They addressed the pitching market in the offseason. It failed. They got a third baseman, a star of the game, where they needed another star in that lineup and desperately needed a third baseman. It failed. This trade deadline, they go after some hitting because they could sure as hell use some after losing two of their star hitters, and it's failed. Every single move they make seems to be in the right direction, but somehow they take five steps backwards every time they try and attempt to go forward. It's the most f***ed up game of Mousetrapper Monopoly that they have been playing for the past 8 to 10 years. And I don't know if there's any end in sight. They might have to trade away whatever they got just to try and recoup the losses in the future. And I mean that figuratively and literally, because they've lost a hell of a lot of games.
It's depressing as hell because we've said it literally every offseason, every like opening day, like, hey, how do you think the Angels are going to do? Says one of us, and then the other one laughs and says fourth place, which is where they are, by the way. Do you remember that weird blip in time when they were in third and the Mariners were struggling? Well, they decided to go 0-7 at the perfect time. The Mariners decided to go 9-0. So guess where the Angels are? Fourth place, sub-500, just at the outset looking into the playoffs. They are 7 games back. Whoo boy, Artie Moreno strikes again with his steadfastness to ticket sales and literally nothing else. I'm not going to go about the business side of things again because, Tom, like you said, we talked about it already. I instead, for my portion talking about this little segment here before we move on, I want to talk about the acquisitions they actually did make to go all in, to make that big push, because, you know, they traded away their number 2 and 3 prospects for Lucas Giolito. They gave away number 9 prospect for Dominic Leone. It's just they gave away their entire system because this is the year. This is the last year we have Shohei. We gotta make something work. Oh, and would you be at all surprised if I told you that basically none of them have worked? Okay, you know what? I take it back. One of them has worked. Their move for Mike Moustakas has actually panned out pretty okay. He had a 105 OPS plus in Colorado. He is rocking the exact same one out in Anaheim in about the same time span, actually in more plate appearances, so he's been consistent, he's been fine. And something I'd like to point out, Tom, he's actually got more home runs as an Angel than Anthony Rendon does if you take out the 2020 season. You know, the one time he was good as an Angel. Thank you for bringing him up, by the way. I completely forgot he existed.
My pleasure.
God damn, they are so bad with contracts. They're bad with everything, but no, literally every single other signing has been a complete dud. Randall Grichuk has a 48 OPS plus since joining the Angels. He had a 121 in Colorado. Prize shiny acquisition, Lucas Giolito. Yeah, no big deal. Only had his ERA plus drop from a 114 to a 50. Probably not a big deal. His actual ERA in Anaheim, 9. 9 flat. He got absolutely shelled by the Braves, and everyone said, oh, it's fine, it's just the Braves. And then he shit the bed against, like, the Royals, and it's like, oh no, we suck again. God, and Eduardo Escobar, you want to know what his biggest contribution to the Angels has been so far? It actually happened tonight, when he pitched. They brought him in for the 9th inning to allow only one run in a blowout where they got f***ing annihilated by the Rangers 12-0. That number that Tom threw out in the beginning of this segment, what was it? What are they since the All-Star break, Tom? 3-9? Guess what? They're 3-10 now. They lost 12-0 to the division leaders. I said the Yankees are a joke. The Angels still find a way to be worse. The Yankees are literally tied their shoelaces together and are tripping down the sidewalk, tumbling like a weed in the wind, and the Angels still find a way to top them. Frankly, I'm impressed. At the rate they're going, Tom, they are going to be the worst, like, probably among the worst teams in baseball of the next 10-plus years. I don't want to go ahead and say they're outright going to be the worst, because the Royals and A's still exist, but I'm going to be real. The second they start selling, and it really should be soon, they're going to be down there, man. They better thank their lucky stars they're in the same division as Oakland, because I could see a reality where they're in the same realm as the Rockies. Maybe even the Royals, because Lord knows Trout's not getting any younger. Otani's definitely gone now. And you have no prospects anymore, because you gave them all away for the faint hope of competing in a year where your ceiling was maybe third place. If I say any more, I'm going to go on forever, and we've still got some more stories. So let's say we end this episode, Tom, with two counts of traded players airing the dirty laundry of their former team for the loving cameras to see. First things first, Justin Verlander stole the headlines of New York media over the past couple days when it came out that someone in the Mets clubhouse had said he was a diva, unbearable in the clubhouse, and put on a nice shiny face for the cameras because he knew how to. Now, that's not actually the only thing that came out about Justin Verlander within the past couple days. There are actually two more that I was able to pick up. Tom, if I missed anything, please chime in. A reported beef with Max Scherzer dating back to their time in Detroit together earlier in the decade has also surfaced. Kind of going through the History Channel there for that one, but hey, if there was a time to bring it up, might as well bring it up when the guy was ousted for being a clubhouse cancer. And most interestingly to me came from Verlander's mouth himself, when he, in a very, I don't even want to say roundabout way, Tom, he pretty much straight up said it. I'm going to look up the exact quote right now.
Oh, I've got the Verlander quote if you're looking for it.
Oh, you have it? By all means, please read to our loving listeners what Justin Verlander had to say about the Mets and their lacking facilities.
Yes, and I will read you the quote, and then I will let Tony continue on with his point. So, Justin Verlander, from his first tweet in just about a year at this rate, I want to say that I have nothing but respect for the Mets organization, and I enjoyed connecting with all of my teammates this season, new and old. It was truly a wonderful group of people. That being said, we all know the success of a team is made up of more than just the players on the field. Everyone's input is valuable. I'm sorry to hear that a staff member took offense to constructive criticism on how we could improve, wishing nothing but best to the Mets moving forward. End quote. That is what Justin Verlander had to say. Tony, carry on.
So, it appears apparent that the multiple Cy Young Award winner, multiple-time World Series champion, sees the Mets analytics office as subpar. And if you've seen them this year, can you hardly blame him? I mean, if I was a fan of the Mets and Justin Verlander basically ousted my analytics staff, yeah, that's not really a good look. Folks need to start going. Like, we were honestly talking about this in the group chat, Tom, when the Braves put down, like, three touchdowns on them the other day in the first game of a doubleheader. What did they win, like, 21-3? Something crazy like that? Matt Olson and Ozzie Albies had maybe, like, 15 ribbies combined between the two of them? I don't even know what else we could say about the Mets anymore. Just, the more and more keeps coming out about them, the more and more it just turns into such a lost season, such a wasted opportunity with this core. I mean, it's not like much of it was homegrown anyway, hence Verlander and Scherzer. Which Scherzer is another piece entirely. That it was a rumor at one point that he was the one that called Verlander the diva. I don't think that's actually true, though. I think that was just hearsay. I do find it ironic, though, that Verlander got called the diva when he's been the one basically praising the Mets ever since he left, saying, or, you know, outside of this one analytics comment, even in that blurb you read, Tom, he said, "I wish nothing but the best for the Mets going forward." Scherzer has not given two shits. He said, "Steve Cohen and Billy Epler told me this, that, the other thing, said we're not going to be competing for next year. They told me to go f*** myself. They said, f*** your wife and then get out of here." That's it. Been nothing but shit talking the Mets ever since he got to Texas. Verlander, if anything, has held his move with relative grace in comparison. I just find that a smidge ironic. Just a weird, weird situation. Just a lot of he said, she said. Not much more I could add to it, Tom. Just another chapter in the saga of this Mets season.
It sure is. And I will say, he didn't deny being a diva. Just want to point that out there.
Fair enough. He didn't come out and say it.
He could have been. We really don't know. But at the very least, if you're looking at anybody who's kept up their end of the contract, Justin Verlander is one of the guys who actually did so this season. So you could call him a diva all you want,
But he was one of your best players, and he was hurt for like the first 2 months of the season, I would like to point out. So maybe whoever said that should just shut their mouth and do their job a little bit better. Maybe you should, considering the state of your franchise right now. You're making Steve Cohen's money spent look really, really terrible. Now, this could be a teammate, it could be a staff member. If it is a staff member, then that nerd needs to shut the hell up. And, I don't know, again, do their job better. If it's a teammate, you shouldn't be anonymous. You should be able to put your name to your face. There's enough money in it for you that you should be able to do something like that. Just saying. And this isn't the first time we've heard an anonymous Mets quote. Remember when Marcus Stroman was kind of talking crap about the Mets, as he normally does as a member of the Cubs? Well, anonymous Mets were kind of saying, yeah, that doesn't surprise me that he said something like that. We don't know which Mets said that, but we know they were anonymous. So maybe they should start showing face, and maybe then they'd have more passion on the field. Speaking of passion, there's none, apparently, in the Chicago White Sox organization and their clubhouse. Because Kenyon Middleton, after being traded from the Chicago White Sox to the New York Yankees, not really much of a better situation, but at least apparently they have some culture, according to Middleton. Others, such as Lance Lynn, as Tony is putting down, as he spelt Lance Lynn's name wrong. He added the second N at the end.
Hey, they don't need to know that.
Well, they do, so suck it. He corroborated on this as well, but Middleton's quote pretty much spells it out for you all. And I found this on Twitter, by the way. This is at Yankees Blue, who has it, but other people have it too. There's an ESPN story if you want to go read it. Middleton, the White Sox have, quote, no rules. I don't know how you police the culture if there are no rules or guidelines to follow because everyone is doing their own thing. Like, how do you say anything about it because there are no rules? You have rookies sleeping in the bullpen during the game. You have guys missing meetings. You have guys missing PFPs. That's pitcher fielding practice for anybody who doesn't know. The second I found out I was traded to the Yankees, I shaved my face. I was ready to play by their rules because all I want to do is win games. You know how to act, in brackets here. You know not to be late, and you know there are consequences if you are late. And this shouldn't need translation, but if it does, it pretty much means the White Sox are run like the Wild, Wild West. And quite frankly, that doesn't surprise me at all. From the team that has Rick Hahn in charge of everything, and Jerry Reinsdorf, and this team hired Tony La Russa to try and turn around their fortunes. He never made a connection with his guys, and apparently it looks like Pedro Grifol, either he tried or didn't try hard enough, because there is apparently no culture in the south side of Chicago. No wonder why the White Sox continue to be just a huge disappointment. I'm trying to think of a great comparison that I could make. It's almost as if it's like a snowball rapidly going down a hill that's really sunny outside, like in 90 degree weather. Like, it's going straight down and it's melting fast. It's already melted, quite honestly, if you ask me. But at least they still have Luis Robert, so it's not really completely melted. They're hanging on by a thread, but even then, that's not saying much. So, long story short, the White Sox, their socks are a little bit stained at the moment because they have no control over anything.
I mean, is anybody really shocked at this?
Nope.
Like, when this came out, I know you said you are, but like anybody who read this, did you read this and think, wow, that's really telling? Or is it more like, yeah, you could tell. It's pretty apparent. I mean, weren't there rumors of this circulating, I forget if it was last year or the year before, is one of the years with La Russa at the helm, where it was basically, you know, an inmates running the prison type of analogy, where the rookies just did whatever the hell they wanted. The veterans tried to maintain some semblance of order. I imagine Jose Abreu may have been in that conversation, you know, sort of the elder statesman of the White Sox, and they just couldn't get a grip on anything. And they would flame out as a result because they have no team culture and they have no semblance of structure or discipline. That adds up. That is really telling for the White Sox, and what makes it even funnier is that some White Sox fans were ecstatic when Tony La Russa got fired because, oh, the problem is over. Oh, how little you truly knew. Because Rick Hahn and Jerry Reinsdorf are absolutely part of the problem. I mean, they are the problem. Kenny Williams is absolutely the problem, too. I believe he's their president, if memory serves. He's their GM or their president, one of the two. I know he's up there somewhere. I know White Sox fans have nothing but amazing things to say about him. But God knows, man, this is just the least surprising thing possible. But if anything, the one silver lining for the White Sox is, hey, when Pedro Grifol inevitably gets fired one day because he is apparently not running a tight enough ship in the slightest, the first thing you could do is whip everybody into shape. There you go. Step one. Administer some semblance of discipline. You know, don't turn it into a boot camp because, you know, going a hard 180 in the opposite direction is not how you get results. But you got to keep everybody in line. You've got to be able to set boundaries. You've got to be able to put the fear of God into players if they're late to a meeting or they screw up something or they sleep during the game. That should be inexcusable. That should be an automatic benching for at least another game. Couple laps around the arena, maybe a fine from the team. Something. God, anything. I don't know. The White Sox, it feels like we said this for the past three American League teams, the Yankees, the Angels, and now the White Sox, continue to be one of the most poorly run organizations in all of sports, if you ask me. I don't know how many other sports have the, let's say, tails coming out of it like the White Sox do right now. Like, I don't know how long it's going to take to clean out this mess, but clearly this is a problem that perpetuates and seeps far, far, far below the surface. It's not just players underperforming and managerial indifference. This is a full-on culture war. This is literally the rambunctious, lawless youth versus basically themselves. When that gets into order, we could talk about the White Sox beginning to rebuild. But until then, Chicago is just a lawless wasteland where players go to just waste their careers. Which, actually, one more point before I get out. I feel so bad for Andrew Benintendi, man. Like, I saw a tweet. If I remembered who tweeted it out, I will absolutely give them credit. But someone just said, I feel so bad for Andrew Benintendi. Like, yeah, he kind of sucks this year, but the guy chased the bag. Just wanted a chance to go win on a semi-respectable team with some semblance of potential. And he ended up on one of the biggest laughing stocks in the baseball landscape. You know, I imagine he's stayed controversy-free in all this just because, you know, he's been around the block. He's won a ring, been with four teams now. Or who knows, maybe he is part of the problem. I wouldn't know. I'm not in their clubhouse. But God, he's just trying to get the bag, chase another ring, and he's got to be caught up in this cyclone, so feel bad for him. Everyone else, Lord knows, the ones who are perpetuated in the White Sox system seem the most guilty.
Well, they kind of have the exact same problem as the Yankees do. They need to get rid of the brass up top. Hal and Brian are butt buddies at this rate. The same can be said about Rick Hahn and Jerry Reinsdorf. Sometimes you got to let go of the past and just say, you gotta move on into the future. Even if the present looks alright, if you're not getting the results, you can't live in a fantasy world. You gotta move on. Evolve. If you don't evolve, you're going to fall behind and fail. And that goes in any aspect, in any event in life. You need to evolve with the times. And clearly what the White Sox are doing, I'm not even going to talk about the Yankees because we're just talking about the White Sox here. They need to figure their shit out before they can even think about building a new roster and core. They need to sort out the problems that they've got in their clubhouse. They need to figure out how to gain control of their clubhouse. And I don't know necessarily how you could do that. I would say bring in more veterans and stuff like that, but who the hell is going to want to go play in Chicago and play peacemaker and babysitter to a bunch of whiny babies who have no culture, no sense of pride in their game? You're just hurting yourself if you go to the White Sox. Obviously, somebody will accept the money, but just getting veterans isn't necessarily a start. You need to clean house sometimes, too. No matter if they're your closest friend or not, you can't mix business and pleasure and business and friendship. You gotta move on. But at any rate, that's all the stories we have. We told you this was gonna be a drama-filled episode of the Diamond Duo podcast, and I don't think this disappointed Tony. Every single story had some bit of drama that kind of just kept adding and adding on layers, like it's a lasagna being cooked up in the oven at some point. There's just so much depth and complexity in some of these stories that it's amazing that this all kind of happened in a 2-week span. And I'm actually glad we covered it all at once, because it was just a hell of a lot of fun to just kind of keep talking about and digging into the issues that are rooting baseball right now.
Definitely fit the theming, definitely, you know, tackle them all just to get it out of the way type of thing. Hopefully we won't have nearly as much drama to talk about next week. But I will say, I think the best thing we got out of this, Tom, is the title. I'm hereby now petitioning we call this episode The Drama Lasagna. Analogy. But, yeah, no, just a bunch of spicy takes, spicy stories from all across the league. God willing, I mean, some of these have already started to fizzle out, like we said, with, you know, Kevin Brown being reinstated and the Kenyon Middleton stuff being largely expected once other White Sox, or rather former White Sox, started corroborating. Oh, we didn't even mention with that the Yankees went to guaranteed right field not long after that. Kenyon Middleton came into pitch and the digital team didn't put his name on the Jumbotron. They said it was a mistake, but it was like a mistake because of his number. But A, his number was known, and B, it didn't happen to literally any other player. That's a really funny coincidence if it was really just because, oh, it was a technical whoopsie. Interesting as f*** episode. And hell, for what it's worth, one of the easiest rundowns I've made in a while, because I looked at, how many headlines are there? Oh, cool, there's 20. Sweet, let's talk about that. Now we're calling it an episode. That's it.
One of our quicker episodes, too. I'm looking at the recording. We're only at an hour and 40 minutes. That's actually pretty damn good for us.
Damn. All right. Yeah, no, that is actually really good and kind of perfect, because it makes for a quicker editing session tomorrow.
That would be good. And we're just hitting midnight, too, so that's even better. We're done before midnight, baby. That's a first we can say in a long time. But all I'm going to say before I'll let Tony wrap it up, it was the Diamond Duo podcast. And the passion sure met the plate this episode. That's a callback to the Diamond Desire.
I hope you know, had you not said that, if you just did a straight outro, like, oh, this has been the Diamond Duo podcast, blah, 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 whatever, I would have said, hey, don't you mean the Diamond Desire podcast?
Do you want me to ask ChatGPT for a sexy outro to this episode? I will do that.
I had one ready, but you know what? Screw it. While I stall and cook something up, ask ChatGPT. Why the f*** not? If it's like four paragraphs long, though, I'm not saying it.
Oh, it's making me log in. Hang on. Hang on.
Please hold, ladies and gentlemen, while Tom asks the computer to think of an outro for me.
Okay. Right. I can't spell right. Right. Write me right. A sexy outro to a podcast about baseball.
If I ever have to write an email at work to someone in like corporate or someone out of market, I'm just gonna say, write me a sexy email.
Oh, it gave me a new name too. Nice.
Oh, we got a new name.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm excited now. Wait, share your. Do you want to say it or you want to share your screen?
Oh, I'm gonna say it. Oh, you know what? I want you to read this in a sexy voice, so I will share my screen.
Oh God. I don't know if my voice is sexy enough tonight. It's a little. It's not raspy enough.
Here you go.
All right. I don't see it. Oh, wait, no. It says you're sharing.
Uh-oh.
Wait, I actually don't see it.
Hello, hello, hello.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I just wanted to make sure my recording got screwed up because Audition wasn't very happy with me for sharing my screen. I should have just copied and pasted it. Hang on. I could do that instead.
That's much smarter.
Yeah, let me get rid of
how long is this?
It's four paragraphs.
Oh, of course it is.
There you go.
Compromise. I'll look at, oh my God, it actually is.
No, you gotta read this now.
All right. I'm sorry, I just read the first sentence and I'm already laughing. This is gonna be a problem. Okay. As the final inning draws to a close, and the stadium lights cast their enchanting glow upon the field, we must reluctantly bid adieu to this intoxicating episode of Swing and Desire. No subheader this time. But fear not, dear listeners, for the passion of the game and the allure of the diamond will forever linger in our hearts. I like to consider mine an absolute win because mine didn't talk about the allure of uniforms like Tom's did. Either way, just as a stolen base quickens the pulse and a well-executed double play leaves us breathless, it's the dumbest thing ever. Our journey together has been a whirlwind of emotions and desires. What is it with desires? Jesus Christ, use a different word. Remember, the game of baseball, much like life's most tantalizing moments, is a delicate balance of strategy and fervor. As we part ways for now, let the memories of our decisions, anecdotes, and revelations fuel your own fires of passion. The crack of the bat, the hum of the crowd, and the thrill of victory. May they continue to dance in your dreams, evoking the same excitement that has graced this podcast.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you for joining us on this alluring expedition into the world of baseball. Until we meet again, keep the spirit of the diamond alive and the flame of desire burning bright again with the desire. Mother of God, calm down, ChatGDP. It's just baseball. Play ball, dear listeners. Play ball.
No, you gotta say that more seductively. Play ball, dear listeners. Play ball.
I couldn't, it threw me off, because what the f*** kind of way is that to end an episode? Yeah, the call to action is actually go out there and play baseball. What, you think we're going to just sit down here in our basements like a bunch of hermits and talk about baseball? You f*** crazy. Go outside and play, you lazy ass. I'm talking to me in the future, not you. I wouldn't be that mean.
I was about to say, if you just ended it like that, that would be great.
I'm going to cut it off after I say lazy ass. Goddamn. Put a cherry on top of the most chaotic outro probably ever. Go follow us on social media at Diamond Duo Pod on Twitter, the Diamond Duo Podcast on Instagram, yada yada, you get the deal. Play ball, listeners, play ball. Adios. See you next week.